spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Good morning, I'm Tina Janoukas. Welcome to Spoken Word on 3CR. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to elders past and present. Today on Spoken Word, I have poet, award-winning photographer and fellow Spoken Word presenter, Di Cousins, to talk about her two new chapbooks, One Breath, containing her own poems and photography, and Yellow Shirt, featuring the posthumous poetry of the late and much-loved Judith Rodriguez, accompanied by Di's photography. We'll devote the first half of the show to One Breath and the second half to Yellow Shirt. One Breath is a collection that folds into itself the personal, the reflective, and the political. The poems register the shock of the COVID pandemic, the necessity for ethical engagement with refugees, and the importance of public memory when the unthinkable happens. Di, welcome to Spoken Word.
Thank you, Tina. It's really great to be here.
Di, in your foreword, you describe the poems in One Breath as occasional, yet taken together, they reveal a poet deeply engaged with the world in a moral and ethical way. Would you read the opening poem, One Breath, one of the COVID poems in the collection, and talk about how COVID emerges in your work as a reminder of our interdependence, our shared need for community and connection?
Certainly. One Breath. Some people imagine all the stars as a single constellation. Old China saw one Chinese court revolving around the emperor as pole star. The Alaskans see Yachty, a coyote-headed whole sky man whose circumpolar stars never set. With the plague upon us, we now learn we have one breath, shared in shops, theatres and buses, and only limited by masks, social distance and closed doors. Borders dissolve and the virus circles the earth. So it was rather surprising to find during COVID that we had to worry about each other's breath, you know, that somehow this virus that originated outside of Australia could be anywhere in Australia. It could be in a shop, it could be in a supermarket, it could be in the breath of someone walking behind you, and it could be in any and every country in the whole world. So I felt this sense of the virus and our breath being shared, that, you know, we all have that connectedness of breath, which goes to a Buddhist idea called interdependence and the connectedness of everything. So I thought that it was really quite surprising that COVID showed us that, you know, we are not isolated. We cannot be isolated. And in the occasion of the epidemic, we are all connected.
I find your mention of Buddhism interesting because, of course, you are yourself heavily involved in Buddhism.
Yeah, that's right. I have a PhD in Himalayan studies and a Medal of the Order of Australia for my contribution to the Buddhist community. So I'm very involved in the Buddhist community in Australia. But it also provides a framework for understanding how the world works. And the sense of connectedness is a Buddhist idea. The Sanskrit word is pratityasamutpada. And I think it's illustrated by these occasions when we have to recognise our shared connection.
Among my favourite poems in One Breath are those in which you use the Japanese form, the haibun, which you handle with remarkable clarity and restraint to carry powerful personal and political concerns. I'd love our 3CR listeners to hear one of the political haibun, which embody both your ethical concerns for the other and your resistance to political corruption. Could you read After Detention Offshore and tell us what draws you to the haibun, and why this form with its blend of prose and haiku is such a carrier of your socially aware consciousness in this and other political haibun.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really excited to discover the form of the haibun when I was doing an online course with Myron Lysenko during COVID. Myron Lysenko being a well-known poet in Melbourne and now in Woodend, and he's also a great advocate of the haiku. And this Japanese form includes a prose section, a title, and a haiku. And the title and the prose and the haiku all have to say something slightly different, but which bounce off each other. So this is called After Detention Offshore. We were walking up and down the street, looking for help wanted notices. I asked him about being homeless. Was he cold at night? He said he was fine. He had two blankets. What about a sleeping bag? I asked. What is that? He asked. I guess they don't have them in Iran. I described it as like two blankets stitched together. Yes, they had given him one at the Salvation Army office in the city, but he didn't think it was useful because it would bind his feet when people came to attack him in the night. I agreed. I had not thought of that. And this is the haiku. The windy season. A branch fell last night. Morning, and the tree still shakes.
So why do you use the haibun for this kind of political, socially aware poem?
Well, because I wanted to give a simple description of the experience of walking up and down the street looking at help wanted notices with this refugee who at that time was staying with a friend, but he had been homeless and I believe he's now homeless in Sydney. I was really very shocked when I said to him, have you got a sleeping bag? And he said, no, that would bind my feet when people come to attack me in the night. I thought, oh, okay. I would never have thought of that. So I just wanted to tell that story as a narrative story. But the day after that story happened, the trees were shaking still after a really windy night. And I thought that was a nice metaphor for the continued traumatization of people who have been in detention offshore and how that doesn't really somehow just go away all of a sudden. It persists.
You also use it to tell some family stories, and I find the one in particular that relates to the perfume bottle very interesting. Would you mind reading that poem?
Sure. So this is called My Grandmother's Dressing Table. The dressing table is covered in dust. Three small brass bottles came from Grasse in France nearly 60 years ago and still contain perfume. I would like to open them, but the rubber cork may break. Below the treasured hair in a cut glass pot, I am surprised by his picture, my mother's first love. I know his name, although I found it out after she died. A box of letters on the drawing room floor suddenly asked to be opened. They had been in plain sight, but somehow unnoticed beside a chair. My 90-year-old cousin was the only one who remembered him. And then the haiku. A silver tray with the green man of spring. I washed the dust from his eyes. And of course, the green man of spring is a kind of a pagan character. He's always surrounded by curlicues of leaves and things. And one of the artifacts on this dressing table is a silver tray with the green man of spring. So washing the dust from his eyes was a little bit like finding the photo of the first love.
What I find interesting about both that poem and the political poems that you also write using the haibun form is the detail that you pay attention to. It's a very observant mind at work, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. I think there's a lot of poetry in the reality of the world around us, if we can just see it. I do try to pay attention to what's around and then to write that down.
Where does that come from?
I think I've always been like that. I actually have terribly early memories, you know, like being in prams and that kind of thing. So I think I've always been observant, yeah, paying attention.
There is grief in the poems in One Breath. There are poems of personal grief and poems of public grief. But I find one poem in particular, Pellegrini's, a rare combination of public and private grief. Could you read Pellegrini's and talk about the underlying shock of the loss of a public figure and friend?
Yes, well, I've been going to Pellegrini's, well, probably the first time I went, I was taken along with some other children by family friends, and they had a restaurant behind the cafe at the front. Anyway, it's been a kind of a lifelong association, and I particularly used to go there in the late 80s, early 90s, and sort of chat with Sisto, who was one of the owners, and he also worked there as a maitre d' waiter, and he was always fun. So I was personally very, very sad to hear that he died. Anyway, so this is sometime after he was killed in a terrorist incident in Bourke Street, which was a really very great shock. So the poem is Pellegrini's. We are still here. We are still here. And Rocco, standing, embraced me, sitting on a bar stool at Pellegrini's. We have lost Sisto. It is nearly 1 year since he was killed by a madman with a knife in Bourke Street, and yet the cafe continues, seemingly unchanged. See the long row of fixed stools placed before a wall-length mirror, the 1950s paraphernalia displayed on the shelves over the work area, the faded ads and pictures, but also a full-page appreciation of Sisto from the Lord Mayor 5 years ago. The crowds, the granita and lasagna are the same, and yes, Rocco and I are still here. But what tricks my mind plays. Did I not see Sisto still here behind the counter? No, it was Rocco, and yet perhaps Sisto also is still here.
I find that a very moving poem, Di.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was really sad. I mean, the whole experience was very sad. And, you know, I and, you know, 10,000 others went along to the public funeral, the state funeral at St. Pat's. And, yeah, I really felt his loss. He was a great contributor to Melbourne.
A persistent practice in your work is the use of photography alongside poetry. For me, the images take on their own reflective journeys. What is the creative motivation for you?
Well, it's illustration on one hand, and then it's also to create some kind of chemical reaction between two different elements. And another thing is that I feel that when you have illustrated books, it's actually a more appealing to a wider group of people because you can turn the pages. I give people one of my chapbooks, they're always full of photos, and people just turn the pages straight away. They want to see the pictures. Whereas one thing that you don't want, you give somebody a poetry book and then the pages are not turned, you know, the book is not opened. But because of the pictures, it sort of grabs people in. And I've always had an enthusiasm for things like graffiti and, you know, landscapes and skyscapes. I mean, in this, I've got a sort of a twilight photograph of the moon, and there's photos from Korea and everywhere I've been. So I think that it just adds also an element of fun.
Would you read a final poem from One Breath?
All right, well, I'll just do a Buddhist one, just something different. Alora, I don't speak the language of birds, and their conversation goes undeciphered in the Buddha's cave. Cool stone, pitted by chisels 1,500 years ago, The deep indentations holding vast statues with simple topknots, lotus-seated whisk-bearers and offering goddesses, whose old paint has gone brown but once was gold and yellow and green. These silent places now with the footsteps of tourists and their casual calls retain their solitude. The time which passes is deep time, undisturbed.
I'm glad you read that one. Yeah. I like that one.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Welcome back. I'm Tina Janoukas. You're listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Before the break, I was speaking with poet, award-winning photographer and fellow Spoken Word presenter Di Cousins about her new chapbook, One Breath. In the second half of the program, we turn to Yellow Shirt, the posthumous poetry of the late and much-loved Judith Rodriguez, which Di has curated alongside her own photographs. Di, could you read portraits of women reading from Yellow Shirt and then talk about how the book actually came to being?
Sure. Well, perhaps before I read portraits of women reading, I'll tell you how the book came into being. So none of us really understood, I think, how unwell Judith Rodriguez was in the last 6 months of her life. At least I certainly had no idea, and no one I know really understood how unwell she was. But she had been due to go to the PEN International Congress in September 2018, which I was also going to, and she couldn't go. She wasn't well enough to travel. So then I sort of got a sense of how unwell she was. Slightly before that, she had published and launched her last book in her lifetime, which was called The Feather Boy and Other Poems. And she seemed well at that time. But afterwards she said to me, "What do you think about The Feather Boy?" And I said, "Oh, it's wonderful, but I'd like it even more if it had pictures, you know, because I really like pictures." Anyway, and she said, "Well, we should do a book together with my poems and your photographs." So it was a commitment that was made in the last 6 months of her life. And when I got back from Penn Congress, I found out she was in hospital, and I went to see her, and she was sorting out which poems were to go into this posthumous collection, Yellow Shirt. And, you know, she said, "I've worked out this many and maybe another one, and I'm just putting them in order." And then I went to see her a second time, and, you know, she's still working on it. And then after she died, Sybilla, one of her daughters, gave me the folder with the poems that she'd selected in the order that they were to be presented in. So that's sort of how the book came about in summary. So the first poem in the book is called Portraits of Women Reading Encounters. The art historian is standing to attention behind her lectern. Since I have come in late, I sit against the door and crane till I hurt. After the paired slides in jerky succession, her stepping stones towards the going rate for visiting lecturers. The hall hears her assert and warms to know these women subjects reading conform to the last century's bourgeois vision. Well dressed on the sofa, showing a page to a child or alone at a table, illustrating leisure, devoted to pictures, no doubt, of idle fiction. No advance for women here. Something's defiled in the smug dismissal. I want to draw distinctions, read face and pose, turn up the agonized novels, the utopian pamphlets, the hope and dread of the West self-diagnosed in terminal afflictions. I saw them steady in one pair of eyes. So, the women are not in the streets. Sit down and read. Educate yourself for the coming conflicts. Thanks, Mother Jones, old organiser of unions, for word of the times. Advice we still are needing, preferable to the barricades as tactics. Mother Jones lived to 100, a life no less useful because she spent years of it in aggregate reading. Well dressed on the sofa or in libraries with her hat on, feet flat on the floor and her back straight by a proper light, and entered conspiracies of tea, warming the phrases for her next oration. No advance, the time to read, those women in paint. This hall full of teachers. One woman fouls her fee.
Beautifully read, Di, and I can really hear Judith Rodriguez's voice in that reading. I have a sense, though, that this, for you, bringing out the chapbook, was a gesture of deep respect and care for a poet and teacher to whom you'd grown close over the years.
Yes, certainly it was, and it was an honour as well. And also, I hope, a way to bring some of her poems to a different audience, you know, an audience that might find them more accessible in a smaller illustrated chapbook rather than in a larger, heavier anthology. She's such a deep writer. Each time you read any of her poems, you find other things in them.
Well, Judith, of course, did select the poems, and the photographs are your creative intelligence. Knowing Judith, as so many of us did through her teaching, her poetry launches, I think she'd be delighted with the chapbook. It is, of course, a profound honour to be entrusted with a poet's last works. I'd like you to read Grave Goods, which is placed beside a lovely multicoloured graffiti photograph, and tell our listeners what you actually did intend this chapbook with its photographs to do for Judith's readers, both old and new ones, beyond just the chapbook looking as lovely as it does.
What did I intend to do? Well, I just intended to make available her work and then, you know, for it to find another audience and to remember Judith, because she's now been gone 7 years and it's a great loss. And I feel that you know, lest we forget our great poets. So just the importance of memory, I think, is my point.
Well, would you like to read Grave Goods?
Yes, certainly. And I think this poem was based on an actual archaeological dig. Grave Goods. Uncased from mythy millennia, waiting in his Phrygian hill, here's Midas. Bones wrapped on a bier, in a museum make of his tomb, nested among grave goods all gold, flagons, bowls, salvers piled, perfectly preserved for afterlife health's sluiced to glory of rank and conquest. How they crowd the dark space, not for our taking, still his servitors stored this witness we retrieve, and reading verify a name that defied fading. Gone the gathering of grave hordes. Under the tumulus of memories I lie down. The gentle shades of those I loved join mine. Wind takes the tussocks. The mound melts into time's infinite reach of darkness, where I am evermore void, nameless, heedless. Only my words wander, seeking the light, a twitch of remembered dried lips. Here are my bones, my drift, my dish, my offering.
Di, in creating the chapbook, Yellow Shirt, you've enabled Judith's unique voice And we can hear that voice in the poems that you're reading, to be heard in the world again. What does it mean to you personally to have been able to bring this chapbook with your beautiful photographs to the public, given that this was meant to be a project that would have happened had Judith been alive?
Yes. Well, personally, you know, as I said, it's a great honour to be able to do a collaborative project with Judith. And, you know, it just sort of happened that we had this conversation before she died, and then she decided to implement it, and she did it on her deathbed. So there's a tremendous personal significance to me to know that this was the last thing somebody did on their deathbed. She was a great mentor to me and tremendously supportive. She launched three of my chapbooks at Passionate Tongues Reading at the Brunswick Hotel in Brunswick, and was always a great supporter, and she understood what I was trying to do with my work. Whereas, you know, I don't write difficult, obscure, cryptic poetry, which is perhaps often more fashionable. And so it was really nice to have a mentor who supported you, you know, who really got you. And she was a friend. You know, we did things together. I interviewed her here on 3CR Spoken Word 10 times. So, you know, talking about poetry of all kinds, including Indian poetry, Aboriginal poetry, her own poetry. So we shared a great enthusiasm for similar things. So it's, you know, really nice to be able to have some continuity to that.
Di, perhaps we could go out on one of your favourite poems in the collection.
Well, obviously I like them all. The poems that I think we really have to pay attention to in the light of the aspiration to zero emissions and the fact that new gas and coal mines are constantly being green-lighted. And similarly, uranium has, you know, terrible consequences if it's not managed correctly. And she has a poem here which is about not mining uranium. And the poem is called Leave It in the Earth. In their obliterated voices, the dead, those who lived on, the blighted children speak, a clamour over seven decades. Leave it in the earth. Listen, once people of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, the casualties of Chernobyl, the doomed neighbourhoods of the Fukushima shoreline, leave it in the earth. We who now call upon the sun and harness the circling winds, the might of oceans, Earth's labourers to work our works for us. We can leave it in the earth. The sleeper, the secret, the threat insidious, woven in our planet's entrails, heedless of harm it harbours, uranium. Leave it in the earth.
Thank you, Di.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tina.
I'm Tina Janoukas, and you've been listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today, I've been speaking with poet, award-winning photographer, and fellow Spoken Word presenter, Di Cousins, about her new chapbook, One Breath, and her curation of Judith Rodriguez's Yellow Shirt chapbook, both enriched by Di's own photographs. Both chapbooks are available from Di Cousins' own website,
dicousins.com, which is dicousens.com.
Spoken Word broadcasts every Thursday at 9 a.m. on 855 AM, or you can download the podcast. Thank you for listening.